Blog Talk Radio.
Make me a better Muslim, purify my thought. I seek refuge in thee from the accursed Shaitan. And I submit totally, God, my word is bond. I know I'm always screaming about righteousness, and it seems like I'm on some self-righteous tip. But no man is free of sin, I'm fighting my jihad. It's an everyday struggle and the fight is hard, but I'm striving hard to be a better person, Lord. Cause I know that I'm far from being perfect, Lord. I'm in no moral position to be judging none, just trying to be a warner before the real judgment comes. That's why in my raps I say what I say, but I'm in the same boat, so I pray every day. Allah strengthen me with humility to deal with my lieutenant. Good soldiers here and obey, help me to represent it. Help me to fight off Satan for real, and help me to deal with this pain that I feel, this anger I feel. Help me live up to the name Muhammad and submit to the truth that you came to reveal. Forgive me for my sins and have mercy on me. Protect me from Satan and the evil he's working on me. Living in this devil's world, putting a hurting on me. The devil trying to end my show and close the curtain on me. Too many enemies plotting, any day I can die. If you're not in my corner, there's no way I survive. But if it's your will for me to go, then I'm gone in the wind. I'm a soldier and I'm gonna stand strong to the end. Help me provide for my wife, I be working hard. But what I make ain't enough and she deserves it all. I barely make enough for us to make it and live. And she deserves so much more than I'm able to give. I wanna do so much for my family, and the fact that I can is so sad to me. The stress be dragging me. Feels like I need a new port and a fat bag of weed. But that's against the restrictive laws I won't ignore. Within the law is my success, plus I signed Form 4. So I pray to you, Lord, help me kill them thoughts. I tell myself it'll get better, but I feel it's not. Looking for better days, but I'm stuck for now. Ain't seen the mosque in 2 months because my truck broke down. I'm stressed out, I'm just keeping it as real as I can. When your pocket's on E, it's hard to feel like a man. I used to get money in my criminal days, but I refuse to go back to my criminal ways. I don't wanna be the nigga that I was before. I was born to be a fool, it's in my blood for show. I'm wrestling with demons from my past that haunt. Mistakes I made, things I've done that I can't shake off. You're killing me softly, and I can't let it go. I got issues with my anger, always ready to blow. Ready to fight anybody, kamikaze, can't help this. But sometimes I wonder and sit back and ask myself, is this because I'm fearless, or do I have a death wish? At night I can't sleep, I toss and turn cause I'm restless. Dealing with these demons, disturbing my peace. On my prayer rug till it's hurting my knees. Oh Allah, you know the children gone back to their mom. Please watch over them and keep them on the path of Islam. I hardly see them anymore, Lord, I miss them a lot. And the pain from it got my heart twisted in knots. My wife got sons that I love and I'm adopting them soon. Plus you blessed us with the baby that she got in the womb. She's a high risk pregnancy, I say that it's scary. She was pregnant once before, but the baby miscarried. So please bless her with the strength, I'm asking you, Lord. I'm begging you please, like I've never asked you before. Oh Allah, please help me to endure my trials. My self-accusing spirit talking to me and I hear it. It's telling me Allah is surely with the patient. Seek refuge in the law and resist temptation. So I beseech your help and beg your mercy indeed. For I believe in you and trust in you for all that I need. And I'm a helper in your cause with your apostle. So please grant to me success, Lord, Allahu Akbar. Amen, amen, amen.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who came to us in the person of Master Farah Muhammad. And I certainly bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is his messenger. I bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, our warner, our comforter, our leader, our teacher, our guide, and our mist. And it is my distinct honor to be back with you all again on our live study group tonight. Put on the new man and greet you in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Salam, sis.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, welcome back to Live Study Group tonight. I thank all of you who have joined me in the various chat rooms and on the phones, and I want to thank you all for your prayers. Evidently, they work because I'm here. I'm still a little bit under the weather, but all praise is due to Allah. I am well and on the road to recovery. And so tonight, we're going to have a special presentation by Student Minister James Muhammad as he expounds on the minister's article in the Final Call newspaper. I think it was last week's article, Family from a Children's, from a Child's Perspective, or the Perspective of Children. This is a very important topic because we know that the children are our future. So who else better other than the minister himself to bring us a full explanation of this article than our beloved brother and our host tonight, a magnificent helper and soldier in the Nation of Islam. And he's showing these youngsters up, selling over 300 final calls a week. Student Minister James Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, dear brother.
Wa alaikum salam, dear sister Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad. It's wonderful to hear your voice after such a long interval, seemed like forever, when we missed the show last week. I'm so thankful to Almighty God, Allah, that you are feeling better on the road to recovery.
Yes,
so all praise is due to Allah. Yes, ma'am. I want to thank also our listening and participating audience, both on the phones and the chat and in the chat room, for your steadfastness, loyalty, for joining us tonight, and for all of the nights that you have joined us on this show. You make this show. Without you, there really isn't a show. And so those of you who have elected to stay with us, to be patient with us, to forgive us off times, well, not off times, but sometimes we suffer technical difficulties. Sometimes we are absent. Sometimes we are traveling. And you have suffered with us in times where the broadcasts were not as up to par as they should be. And, of course, that's my fault. But I want to extend a hearty and enthusiastic thanks to you all, appreciation to and for you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And as always, we begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. We bear witness to the oneness of Almighty God, Allah, and to the oneness of His prophetic community. As Muslims, we believe in Jesus and the gospel, or the Injil, as it is referred to in Arabic. We believe also in Musa or Moses and the Torah or the Old Testament and its laws. We believe in, of course, Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah 1400 years ago, through whom the last revelation of Almighty God Allah was revealed, that takes us to and through the judgment of this world. The revelation of which I speak, of course, is the Holy Quran, the book of guidance of the Muslims. Students, and I am a student in the ministry of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, under the teachings and guidance of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. As a student, and the grateful student. I can't thank Almighty God Allah enough for making his presence known to us and intervening in our affairs in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, the long-awaited Mahdi of the Muslims and the Messiah of the Christians. We thank Allah for Master Farad Muhammad. That's a statement that the minister shared with us and gave explanation for. And, of course, if you'd like, we could go into an explanation of that statement. However, that's not the subject matter, but I'm sure since I stated it, it will probably come up in the question and answer period. But we thank Allah God, who appeared in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, for raising up from our midst his messenger Messiah and now exalted Christ, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, through whom we have been given the wonderful exempt quality of a human being. He is Redeemer, of course. The Bible refers to him as the Spirit of Truth, who will guide us into all truth. He's referred to as Comforter. He's referred to as Reminder. I like, over all of those references, Redeemer. Beloved and blessed Redeemer. The foundation of this nation of Islam in this dispensation of its rise. The man of whom I speak is my teacher, my leader, my guide, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. In their names, beloved brothers and sisters and all of you who are listening, we're very happy once again to greet you with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, sir.
Tonight, as Sister Queen Aziza shared with us, the subject matter will be from the article of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan entitled From the Perspective or Family from the Perspective of Children. For those of you who have been with us for the past few weeks and been tuning in, you know that we have been discussing the subject matter of missing children. This subject matter was inspired by our beloved Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad and Minister Tony Muhammad, who's working very, very, first of all, our sister is one of the many jobs that she has, I would say mission, is working in the court system with juveniles. She's their defender. She's their advocate. What a wonderful work. She's their protector. This is a sister that will go after those of whom she has charge, if they not where they're supposed to be, she'll go out at night and hunt them down. Now, this gives rise to concern on my part, but that's the love that she has, the commitment that she has. It's not just to the job, but certainly the children are our future. But I want to talk about this kind of commitment that our sister has shown, demonstrated, exhibited over the years in the capacity of a counselor and advocate for our juveniles who have and oftentimes do go astray and find themselves in the court system. A special thanks to you, dear Queen Aziza, for the sacrifices that you make, for the commitment that you exhibit, for priority over your health. And I bear witness to that. The mission of the children, the mission of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, which is, of course, our mission, the resurrection of the dead. About a month or so ago.
Thank you.
Of course, you're very welcome, dear sister. All praise be to Allah. Don't be embarrassed. But all praise is due to Allah. I know you'll never say it about yourself, so I'll say it.
All praise is due to Allah.
We thank Allah for you and your work and your sacrifice, dear sister.
Thank you so much.
But again, a month or so ago, the news programs, both electronic and periodical, were inundated with the headlines of this heinous kidnap of 300 girls purported to have been committed by this Islamic group called Boko Haram in Nigeria. This headlining announcement created such a clamor and such a stir. And on the surface of things, it gave rise to sincere love and concern for the girl all around the world. Our artist rose up and began talking about the resources they would bring to bear to ensure the return of these captured girls. The white media kept playing it and playing it and playing it. But you know, in the lessons, dear family, the question is posed: can the devil fool a Muslim? And the response is, not nowadays. And in keeping with the truth and reality of that question and answer, Minister Tony, Sister Aziza, and of course myself, and I'm sure many others who participate in the program and in the Blog Talk radio shows, or just conscious people, I'm sure, begin to question. How can Europe and America give so much attention to this when the kidnap of 300 girls in Nigeria is dwarfed or pales in comparison to the kidnapped children that's happening right here in the borders of America, in the borders of these European country? Why has not that same level of attention been given to them? And so this caused us to embark on a study of research to find out exactly what was happening in that regard. Minister Tony had shared with us that he had attended a conference that talked about, the theme of which was sex trafficking. Now, sex trafficking and the kidnap of little children, the kidnap of young girls and boys, are tied together. And what he found out was this was a $64 billion business. $64 billion. Now, when you get up into the billions like that, The business is actually tantamount to a nation. It has its army, it has its government, it has its administrative organization, it has its protector, its laws, bylaws, rules, statutes, policies. But notice, as Minister Tony shared with us, they said $64 billion business, when they should have said a $64 billion problem or a $64 billion crime. This they did not do. So we embarked upon some research a week or so ago, and as we have been running the shows, not only this one, but the show on Saturday, particularly Saturday, Young, Gifted, and Black, hosted by Sister Aziza, we were talking this up, and we were talking about bringing this to the attention of the public and then calling to account those who rose up to profess or to exhibit or to demonstrate their quote-unquote concern and outrage and indignation over the 300 girls that were kidnapped in Nigeria. We wanted to call them to account for not showing that same kind of outrage and indignation and concern for the thousands upon thousands that have been kidnapped, captured, and enslaved right here in America. Right here. Those of you who are on, you remember the statistics. If you don't, I'm not going to get into them right now, because what we want to discuss is the root of this problem. The Honorable, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us to always go to the root of knowledge or the root of a problem. He admonished us not to go to branch knowledge, but to go to the root. And so therefore, we want to take as our theme, family from the perspective. Now I want to talk to you, dear sisters and women, because the scriptures put a heavy burden on you. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has stated, a nation cannot rise any higher than its women. In Proverbs, the 10th, chapter, the first verse, we read, a wise son, and some versions say a wise child, maketh a glad father, but a foolish son or foolish child is the heaviness of his mother. Now let us examine these words in context. That puts a heavy burden on the woman. Now this is not going to be any sexist kind of tirade or discussion, but why is the heavy burden put on the woman? In a wonderful, wonderful lecture series entitled How to Give Birth to a God, in a section in what it's now been transcribed into books, and I suggest, dear family, all of you who are listening, if you don't have the lecture series or don't have the book, get the book, How to Give Birth to a God, by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, in a subsection or chapter entitled How to Operate on the Womb. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan writes, a crime against a woman is a crime against humanity. It is almost an unpardonable sin because you are destroying a co-operator with God in the procreation of human life. It is sickening to hear the radio where all day long and all night long nastiness and filth pours into the minds of the young and the old. We sit before the television and we are feeding our minds with no reverence for the womb. No wonder America is on her way down into the depths of hell and destruction. It is because there is no reverence for the womb of the woman. There is no reverence for the mind. Most of us were accidents that mom and dad really did not plan. Now, that's a heck of a reality to come to grips with, but let's come to grips with it. The minister continues, they just had a feeling one night that they desired each other, or it may have been some other situation. All of a sudden, she learned 30 or so days later that there was something in her womb. She did not know what to do with what was in her womb. And we give our mothers hell because they really did not know how to make us. Listen good. If you do not have anything in your head of intelligence, then when you learn that you are pregnant, you will not know what to do with yourself or with the baby that is being made. You do not know who you are. You do not know what your purpose is in the world. You do not know how to make a baby. You know how to let one be made. There is a difference. But you do not know how to properly make one. If you, as a woman, do not have the proper desires to feed your will, what then can you produce from your womb? Look out there and see what you are producing. Sisters, women, you are not producing anything of value because you're not projecting value into your womb. Before your child is born, you are not projecting value. After it is born, you are not projecting value on yourself. Since we do not know ourselves, we disrespect you and ourselves, meaning the man. But since we do not pay proper respect to the womb of a woman, we do not really understand who a woman is and why a woman must never be abused or misused. This is why you, as a woman, must begin to learn who you are, not from the scholars of the world, but from the God who created you and fashioned you after the womb of the universe from which he created everything. We, as men, can never advance except through your womb. There is no advancement for civilization except that it comes through the womb. We have got to change the world. And you cannot change the world unless you change and reform the thinking of a woman. Now, what are the circumstances under which we lay down one with another, the consequences or the results of which is a pregnancy? Well, these are questions, of course, you can't answer me, and I don't want you to answer publicly over the airwaves. I want you to think, dear women. Think. Think. When you lay down with the man, is the thought in your mind or in his? Let's make a God. Let us dedicate the fruit of this act to the God that created us, to the God to whom we owe our lives, to the God to whom we owe everything. Think about it. What is the state of mind? In the Holy Quran, in the 19th surah or chapter, verses 2 through 5, we want to give you from Allah, not from Brother James, but from Allah, the mindset that should be dispositioned in the minds of those who participate in this procreating activity, recreating activity. And mention of the mercy of thy Lord to his servant Zechariah. I'm sorry, it's a mention of the mercy of thy Lord to his servant Zacharias when he called upon his Lord, crying in secret. He said, my Lord, my bones are weakened, and my head flares with hoariness, and I have never been unsuccessful in my prayer to thee, my Lord. And I fear my kinsfolk after me, and my wife is barren, so grant me from thyself an heir. Now this is wonderful, wonderful language. So grant me from thyself. Not a son, not a daughter, but look at the language, an heir. An heir. Let us look at what that word means, an heir. Oh, I hope everybody is all right, pretty good. I hope you are too. The word heir, H-E-I-R, is defined as follows. A person who inherits or has a right of inheritance in the property of another following the latter's death. Number two, under law. In common law, a person who inherits all the property of a deceased person as by descent, relationship, will, or legal process. In civil law, a person who legally succeeds to the place of a deceased person and assumes the rights and obligations of the deceased as the liabilities for debts, possessory rights to property. Number three, a person who inherits or is entitled to inherit the rank, title, position, etc. of another. Now, the principle that is being articulated here, dear brothers and sisters, dear family, is the principle of having someone to which you can leave the work, the production, the product, the business, the property, whatever you do, whatever you have amassed, whatever you have built up in your years, someone that you can leave it to. Not to abuse it, not to squander it, not to ruin it, but to further it, maintain and further it. So here Zacharias is not asking just for a son or a daughter or a child or an offspring. He's asking for an heir. What is your mindset? What is our mindset when we engage in this procreative act of sexual relationship? Some of us call it, you know, many say it's making love, but it's more often than not sex. But even if it's making love, what is the mindset? Are you asking God to bless you with an heir? And if it's going to be an heir, what will the heir inherit from you? I want you to think now. Father, think now, mother. What is it about your life that you have amassed in the life that you have lived thus far that you want to leave to your children? We're going to the root of these problems by the grace of Allah. The Holy Quran, chapter, that same surah or chapter, verses 5 through 6. So grant me from thyself an heir who should inherit me and inherit of the children of Jacob, and make him, my Lord, acceptable to thee. This is the mindset that Allah God is instructing us to be in, the disposition of mind, the inclination. We want to ask Allah that he would give us an offspring, an heir from ourselves that will keep up, maintain respect, reverence, and further not just the father, not just the mother, but the community from which we come. And above all, Allah, I want him to obey me, certainly, and I want him or her to obey his or her daddy. But above all, Allah, I want to ask you to make him or her acceptable to thee. Now let us keep these Quranic verses in mind. They're very beautiful. And I want to say, let me say this right away. Brothers and sisters, I know we have not been doing it correctly. That is to say, procreating correctly. I know, I'm part of that myself. I'm not trying to throw off on you. A wise person, well, the scripture says, a fool despises correction. A wise person loveth reproof, correction, discipline. But I'm not trying to throw off on anybody. In a few minutes, I'm going to close out my talking points and bring the audience in, because I know you want to be a part of this. I hope you want to be a part of this subject matter. Now let's go to the article, Family from the Perspective of Children. This article is found in volume number 33. Number 44, or 34, dated June 3rd, 2014, of the Final Call issue. Once again, that's volume 33, number 34, dated June 3rd, 2014, of the Final Call. Family, from the Perspective of Children, by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And he begins, as always, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Allah God says in the Quran that each creature is created in need. Therefore, Allah God is the supplier of all needs. Allah, God, is independent of his creatures, but he created all of his creatures to depend on him. Allah, God, supplies the needs of all of his creatures through what he has created. Each creature has the duty of doing something for itself. This is the nature in which all living things are created. Every human need is a human right. When we are born into this world, we are complete yet incomplete. Therefore, we have needs. All human beings have needs. I have a need to be made secure or to feel safe. As we grow in life, our needs may change, but the need to be made secure will follow us from birth until death. The baby is secured in its mother's womb, but when it comes into its new environment, it cries because it's insecure. The baby is secured by the love and warmth from the mother's body. It is secured by the milk that flows from its mother's breast. It is also secured by the loving care of a mother who makes sure that the needs of the baby to be fed, to be changed, to be in a clean and safe environment are met. All of this must be provided by the mother with the help of the father. Love is a human need, he writes. Therefore, to be loved is a human right. To feel the warmth of a loving embrace is a human need. It is a human right to be encircled by the love of a mother, a father, a sister, or a brother who love each other. To have a sense of family is a human need. Therefore, to have a family or to be a part of a family is a human right. We are born into the world knowing nothing, but we are born into a universe filled with knowledge. Allah God gives us a curious nature and has placed within us a hunger to learn what is in our environment and to master what is in our environment. To learn or to grow in knowledge is a human need. Therefore, the attainment of knowledge is a human right. Every mother and every father should strive to provide the tools of learning for the new life, for it begins to learn from the moment it leaves its mother's womb. Each child is gifted from the Creator with a very special gift that is unique to itself. But these gifts must be discovered, must be cultivated, must be exploited for the good of the individual, the family, and the nation. America and the industrial nations are concerned about human rights violations in the underdeveloped or newly developing nations of the earth. However, with the criteria that we have mentioned, all nations in some way or another are in violation of the human rights of the people, for all nations in some way interfere with the attainment of the needs of the human being. I'm going to read just one more paragraph and then close out our remarks. The desire of children for approval and validation. This is the subtitle. Children desire validation from their parents. How do I look, mommy? How did I do, daddy? No matter what the child does, it desires to be approved by those who mean the most to it. Number one, the mother. Number two, the father. Number three, siblings. Number four, friends and playmates. Children need encouragement. If they falter, that they may do better. The misuse of language and or the harshness of language in rebuke can hurt the emotional and psychological development of the child. Remember, the need to be made secure is with us throughout our lives. So, as we grow, what it takes to secure us mentally, spiritually, morally, economically, and politically is always at work, even in the home. A child wants to know what we are aware of, that we are aware of its presence, even though consciously the child may not be aware. Subconsciously, it wants to know that its rights, even as a child, are respected and protected in with parents, guardians, and when disputes arise among the siblings. The need for justice at all levels of development is that which helps to make the human being secure. Each child looks to the parents to settle their disputes with justice. When disputes arise in the family, it gives the mother and the father a chance to teach and instill family values, moral values, and also to build good character in the all of the aforementioned are needs. All of the aforementioned are right. Some of us think that disciplining our children is abuse, but everything in creation has its affair regulated by law. Okay, I'm going to stop here, but, you know, if you don't have this particular paper, haven't read this article, please read it. And if you have the paper and you haven't read the Centerfold article, please go back and read it. And if you read it, read it again. We're going to be referring to different parts of the of this article. It's not very long as we engage now in the question and answer and comment portion of this show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing me those words as I greet you in peace and ask Sister Aziza if she would now engage the audience via phone or in the chat. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother James. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you very well. Thank you, Queen.
Okay. Yes, we do have questions in the chat room. I think you in for a long night. But let me remind the listening audience, all of you who are on the phone, if you have a question or comment, our advice, whatever it is, please press one on your dial pad. We would love to hear from you tonight. I guess I'm going to start with this one, Brother James. Brother Donald says, I had wonderful parents and was a planned child, all four of us. The decisions I made that were bad, I cannot blame on my parents. That was my choice. Just like the ones I also mentor, I have made negative choices. Not all of them are from broken homes, and nor was I. So why is the burden of this on my mother? And you have like about two more questions pertaining to why the indifferent child is the burden of a mother.
Okay, I anticipated that there would be questions regarding it. And I want to thank you, dear brother. Donald, is it?
Yes, sir.
For your question. You know, dear brother, first and foremost, I want to say that I'm very happy that you had the upbringing and the beginning that you're sharing with us, you were blessed by Allah through your parents, the nurturing that you had. That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. And what I refer to, there is always exception. Exception. So I'm not talking to anyone personally, but I'm talking to everyone personally. There are two wombs in the woman. One is the physical womb, and then one is the womb of mind. You have it too, brother. Men have this too. The physical relationship, of course, we know. And again, Brother Donald, this may not necessarily pertain to you, but when we speak, we have to speak to a general condition. Certainly, there are exceptions. But I want you to look at the condition of our youth generally. Generally, look at the condition of our family structure, our family community, wherein 70% of black families, particularly impoverished black families, and that's pretty much the majority, are headed up by a female. So this is to the general condition, not necessarily to you, Brother Donald, or to the exception. Now let's get back to my statement about the two wombs. The physical womb, of course, everybody's familiar with that, and the act of physical procreation and the insertion of the seminal seed in the vaginal tract of the woman, and this is the physical aspect of it. But there's also a mental womb, womb of mind. The doorway to that womb is the air, E-A-R, the air. The seminal seed is whatever knowledge is permitted through that doorway of the air into the womb of the mind that will create a thought even as the child is created in the womb. There's a thought created in the womb. That thought gives us an inclination, one way or the other. The thought. Thoughts are things, dear brother. Thoughts are real. And the thought in the womb of the mind will actually shape the inclination of the child in the womb of the body. Now, I'm very happy that you were planned, dear brother. I'm very happy about that and the wonderful rearing that you had. I'm very happy about that. All praise is due to Allah. But look at the condition of our mothers, our family. Personally, my profession has been property management before I retired from the secular world. And I managed several projects. Several projects. When I look at the condition of the family structure without a father. And I want to get into also the further responsibility of a society into which you were loosed, dear brother, that you may think that the decisions to go awry were actually yours, but the broader society into which your parents released you also had the responsibility of parenting, of stewarding, of custodying or custodialship. And they have failed drastically, and as a result of their failure, you find yourself involved in this negative behavior. I know you think it's your fault, your decision. I know it. But I want you to think a little deeper, think a little further. What is the condition of the mind of the mother and the father who enter into that act? Now, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he said, most of us were mistakes. And even if we were planned, how many of us were dedicated to God in thought before the act took place? Remember, it's the thought that gives the child forming in the womb its inclination. Now, the decisions that you've made, you made them, yes. The environment in which you were released, I'm sure, contributed to the decisions that you made. What is it about you, dear brother, and this is nothing personal, huh? But what is it about us that inclines us to that kind of negative behavior, even though we had a good rearing? See, these are things that we have to consider. What made us inclined to that behavior? Yes, it's the environment, but there's also something in the initiation of the act, the conception and inception of the act that's there that gives us our inclination. Now, to say that a foolish child is the heaviness of the mother on the surface of things, it sounds like we're putting an unfair burden on the mother, but it's really a compliment because the mother is the child's first representation of God. This is what we're saying. She shapes the child in her womb, or God shapes the child in the womb, but he cooperates and co-creates with the mother, her body and her mind. So when we say it's the heaviness of the mother, it doesn't sound too good, but it's really a compliment and an exhortation to the value of the woman, the value of the mother. She's the first representative of God. She's God's hand fashioning what is in her womb. But as such, the responsibility of giving that which is forming in her womb its inclination is also on the mother. Now, there's another aspect or meaning of that particular scripture. There are many, but I'll share with you one from my vantage point. Another from my vantage point is when we say the heaviness, or when we recite or read the heaviness of the mother, it's referencing the pain that the child, foolish child, brings to the mother, burdens the mother with. My dear brother, you said you made some decisions. Wasn't your mother's fault? Wasn't your father's fault, but if they were bad decisions that ill affected you according to the severity, the level of severity of that ill effect. You brought pain to your mother, heaviness to your mother, and you weren't wise in engaging in these actions. You were foolish. But here again, it's talking about the value of the woman, not denigrating her or unfairly charging her or accusing her or blaming her. It's exhorting us to the value of the woman as the co-operator, the co-creator with God himself. This is why I believe that scripture reads as it does. And this is why much of the burden, the heaviness is suffered by the mother. It's just letting us know how valuable the mother is. It may not be the best language, but I want you to look at it from another vantage point, not a vantage point of blame or accusation or charging or denigrating or disrespecting, but from the aspect of lifting the woman up and her value as a co-creator with God. She's the second self of God, and in fact, God herself, just not worthy of worship. So I'll close my answer there, dear brother. Thank you for your question. I hope that we have shed some light on your question, that answer.
Yes, sir. And, okay, Kendra has a question. She says, I have three children, and as they get older, it is getting harder. How can I teach my 12-year-old daughter not to do what I did? Her father left when she was four. She wanted my seven-year-old son's father to be a father to her. And now she seems to want the same from the father of my two-year-old. But I feel she may someday soon turn to boys for the affection that she does not receive from such father figures. Wow. All right, Brother James.
Well, listen, I mean, these are wonderful questions. And Queen Aziza, I mean, I'm the host of this show, but I'm not the question answerer. You know? I know that you're working from the position of an engineer at this time, but I value your input, particularly with questions like this.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Would you like to weigh in?
Yeah, I'll weigh in. You know, I 12 years old, wow, how I can remember, I lost my father at 12, and it was devastating for me. And I understand what your daughter is feeling. You know, the first thing I would do is, you know, you have to let her know that she's loved. You have to validate her, and you have to tell her value and her worth, and you have to be very explicit, because a lot of times we use language that we shield our children in language, but you can't do that, because sometimes it's just a word that stays with them that makes them go right or go left. So maybe you want to share some of the things that you went through at an early age
pursuing love or are looking for love in all of the wrong places. We have to be explicitly honest with our children and let her know about that journey, but most of all, validate her. Teach her her value. Teach her her worth. Let her know that she's loved. Let her know, excuse me, I don't know the circumstances under which her father is not there with her, but you let her know that within you, you have an abundance of love for her. You know, that's the most important thing, and teaching her her worth, because I don't know what behavior she's exhibiting to you to make you think that she's gravitating towards boys, but if your antenna has come up, then she may have already moved in that direction, and it's not too late for you to snatch her back, but you have to be honest with her. And I'm not judging anybody, but all I'm saying is that when we become parents, we have the responsibility of projecting forward what we desire. And from what you're saying, you know, regardless of the circumstances, I don't know if you're married or if you've been married to your children's fathers, but children mimic what they see in spite of what they hear. And so I tell any woman that it is not healthy for you to have volumes of men in your life when you are raising children. I'm not saying that a woman doesn't need a man, but you have to put this in perspective, because if you are a single mother and you have two children, three children already, then maybe you need to put your personal life on hold, or maybe you need to conduct your personal life outside of the house. But this gives a confusing message to the development of a child and to the development mind that I can have various men, or if one man don't work, I can just run to the next man. And sister, I'm not saying that's what you did. All I'm saying to you is that be careful, because she's at a very impressionable age, and it is not healthy for her emotionally or mentally to have different men in her life that she might emotionally attach herself to, and then for whatever reason they go away. And so now there's the development of insecurity. There's the development of a lack of trust, and she doesn't look forward to stability, so she begins to take on the role of a person who is insecure and who never has a solid relationship when she is mature enough to have a relationship. All of these things stem from childhood, so that's why when we as parents are single parents, we as mothers have to conduct ourselves in a way that is conducive for the development of our children. We have to consider our children. Yes, we have needs. Yes, we want companionship. Yes, we want a man. Yes, we want to go out. Yes, we want to party. Yes, we want to have fun. Yeah, we want to be sexy. We want to be all of these things. But part of parenting is sacrifice. And sometimes we have to sacrifice those things that we desire in order to bring out the best in us, to offer the best to our children so they have the best chance to grow and develop in a righteous state, to give them a fair chance, to give them the tools that they need to go out and face the world and know danger and know lies and deception when they see it. And they get that from us, because we as parents and we as mothers, and particularly with our daughters, that's our responsibility, because we can teach our daughters about men, but more so than anything, we can teach our daughters about their own worth and value. Thank you, Brother James.
Thank you, Queen Aziza. I knew that you would weigh in with something very, very, very valuable regarding our sister's question. A wonderful, wonderful question, dear sister. And I just want to add some words from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan before we go to our next caller or participant. And it's from the same article, Family from the Perspective of Children. He writes, our children will not voice their opinions or share their perspectives in a home that is ruled by fear. They will never say to the parents what they really feel. If our homes are ruled by love and governed by the principle of justice, then we will encourage our children to speak to us so that we may know how they think and what they see and feel. We then have the task to either help them to see better, or in listening, we may find ourselves at fault and we correct ourselves. This is why the principle of atonement works so well in the home. We allow our children to point out to us where they see or feel we have treated them unfairly or handled them improperly. As parents, we carry the pride of parenting and oftentimes the arrogance of parenting. It disallows us to listen to the child's perspective. So I just wanted to add those words. Where we have gone astray, and our children, brilliant as they are today, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that this is the most brilliant, brightest, and strongest generation that we have ever produced as a people. They don't miss anything. They're paying attention even if they look like they're otherwise involved in something else. But they see, they hear, they feel, they think, they reason. So let us be candid when we have gone astray and we know it. Some things, of course, we have to discern that children, depending upon their age, they can't really handle at this time. But for those things that they can, we need to be upfront and real and truthful and honest with them, and then allow them to give their perspective, how they see things from their vantage point. So teaches the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Thank you. Thank you, Queen. Thank you, dear sister, for your wonderful question.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Sister Kendra. And we have a question from Ken22, that's his screen name, and he says, what do we do with the ones that already seem to be lost? And hopefully, I see all of y'all sitting out there on the phone, and I hope this is a learning point and you're taking notes. But inshallah, one of y'all, or some of y'all, press one of your dial packers. We would love to hear from you tonight. And we got a lot of questions in the chat room, Brother James, but that's from Ken. He wants to know, what do we do with the ones that already seem to be lost?
Well, you know, we are all lost to a degree. This is why the God came. This is why we are referred to in the Nation of Islam as the lost and found. But those that seem to be, and I think you're implying in your word lost, that they're irredeemable, you can't get them back. I don't subscribe to that. We don't subscribe to that. Yes, they seem to be beyond reach, but no child, no human being, I would say, but particularly a child or a teenager or a young man or woman is beyond reach. It depends on what you're reaching them or attempting to reach them with. So no one is beyond reach, beyond redemption. Do you have the right methodology? Do you have the right tool with which to reach them? You know, in the scriptures, we are referred to as dead. We are referred to as dead. Buried in a shallow grave. But in that grave, out of that grave, the scripture says there's an acacia plant growing out, showing that while it is a grave, yet that which is in the grave still has some spark of life. But it took one with the master grip. See, a lot of people try to raise the dead, but they couldn't. It took one with a master grip. Now, this is Masonic language. I don't know if you're familiar with it, and I don't want to confuse anybody, but this fits. It's not that the person is not reachable. It's what are you using to reach them with? Strongly suggest. Investigate the teaching of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad as they are given by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and look at the reforming, the transforming, resurrecting result of one who embraces that teaching. Just a suggestion, but I don't subscribe to anyone being lost beyond reach. You keep reaching for them, but you must also examine with what are you trying to reach them. What is your methodology? You know, in school, when the students fail, of course, this modern-day killing field that is called education or the educational system, they say the child failed. But it's not the child that's failing. It's the teacher failing to reach the child, to engage the child. It's the teacher. So let us examine ourselves and what we are attempting, what we're using. What is the methodology? What is the tool that we're using to reach those whom we discern are lost or beyond our reach? Just keep reaching, brother. But in the meantime, go after another. Don't get caught up in reaching for one who may appear to be lost and you use all your time trying to bring them back to be found. No, go after another, but continue to reach for that one. And let me share this with you. That kind of work, and Sister Aziza can tell you much better than I, reaching lost children, that's a life commitment. Now, you can't play with that. That's not a part-time job.
No, sir.
You got to be in it to win it, as they say. Pardon my slang, but I mean, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. But again,
right,
we don't subscribe to anyone being lost beyond redemption.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I just want to say this, Brother James, you know, we are all, I don't care how solid most of us think we are all just one decision away from being lost.
That's,
you know,
right.
We can make a decision in the spur of an emotional moment and end up lost. Something that can, you know, throw us way out of sync. So when you want to go after our children who you say seem to be lost already, then you have to have something to guide them to. And in order to guide them to something, you have to know where they're coming from. And the first thing we have to do is stop being afraid to sit down and have a conversation with our children. You have to have a conversation. You have to get to know them. You can't categorize them. You know, none of them are identical. They are all individuals. And once we start treating them like individuals and stop treating them like a gang, then we can get to the core of what their problems is, because they're all different. And so we can't just throw them into a pot and say, okay, you all are problem youth and you all have the same problem and we're going to use the same methodology on you as we do the others. You can't do that. These are individuals. It's a long, tedious process getting to know all the different personalities, but that is the only way that you successfully help a child, is to really know what they're feeling, know what they're thinking, know what they're going through, know how they handle it, know what they handle well, know what they don't handle well. That's what we have to do, and that's why it's so important that our men get involved in mentoring in our communities, because it's just too many for one person to handle. And so if each brother would take up on one child, you know, take one child up under his wing, it would make a tremendous difference in the lives of young men in particularly, and young girls. You know, it's the same. Girls need fathers. And I know it's a very touchy situation, but many of the schools, public schools in particularly, have mentoring programs, and it allows you to go in and spend quality time with these children and address their needs. And maybe you might mentor one or mentor two, but it's better than not doing anything. So if you could just help one child, it makes a significant difference. And that's what I wanted to add, Brother James.
Thank you, Queen. All praise is due to Allah. And thank you for your question.
Yes, sir. Now we we got a
sure like
comment
to hear from the phone lines. Sure like to hear from the
too.
Phone lines.
Yeah, me too. It's like 690-something, I can't even see. But I know it's a lot of people out there, and everybody just quiet. Okay. But it's Friday night, Brother James. I got to tell you the secret about Friday night. I had to learn it on my own. Anyway.
All right.
Doris says she has five children, five different fathers, and I am just now seeing what my life has done and the impact it has made on my children. Now my 16-year-old is the mother of two by two different fathers. How can I stop this vicious cycle? All right, Brother Dan, there you go.
Well, I think you answered it, dear sister, when you said children mimic what you do more so than listening or following what you say. Now, at this juncture where what has happened has already happened, now it's time to sit down with the daughter and talk with her about the value of the woman. The value of the woman. The value of marriage. The value of family. You know, Hosea says in the scriptures, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. And I have to tell you, you know, when I'm soldiering out there, and I'm soldiering practically every day, I can see the condition of my people, both the brothers and the sisters. And I'm telling you, even the well-to-do ones who think that they really are straight, they're really okay, they're fluent, driving a nice car and probably have a nice home and probably a nice family, but I can see the ignorance of them. And when I say ignorance, I'm not saying it in the insulting or pejorative sense where I'm insulting them that they're dumb. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about not knowing. There's some truth which is the basis of all knowledge, and that is the knowledge of self. What is a woman? And since Hosea said, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, and we've got more bachelor degree holders, more master degree holders, more PhD degree accomplishers than we've ever had in our history, yet debt abounds, particularly in our community. The knowledge to which Hosea is referring to is the knowledge of God and the knowledge of self. These two bodies of knowledge are really one body. They're one and the same because we are all God's children of the Most High God. Therefore, a woman must know who she is, her value as a woman. She's not boobs and butt. Pardon my expression, but I just want to say it plain. Sister, that's not your vital statistics, women. The size of your hips as compared to the size of your waist, as compared to the size of your bosom, the length of your hair, the length of your eyelash, the fullness of your lips, that's not you. The real you is inside of all of that. Who are you, woman? Who are you, man? To know, dear sisters and women, that you are co-creators with God. When Allah God, so teaches the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, created himself out of the darkness of the womb of the universe, he saw in himself a second self, and that second self was and is the woman, and the womb of the woman is a replica of the womb of the darkness of the universe out of which the Creator emerged. That's how powerful you are. That's how valuable you are. This women and girls must know. And if you don't know it, how can they have a teacher except they be sent? Or how can they know except they have a teacher? And how can they have a teacher except he or she be sent? And if you don't know, send her to where she can get that knowledge or point her in that direction. Because it's knowledge of self and the knowledge of God that is the basis of our actions, good and bad, how we perceive ourselves. But it's not too late. Not too late. Talk with her. Guide her. Counsel her. Don't criticize her or judge her. Talk to her, counsel her. And I would strongly recommend get the message of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on that subject matter, particularly the lecture, A Woman Can Rise No Higher or A Nation Can Rise No Higher Than Its Woman. And, of course, How to Give Birth to a God. And, brothers, get those lectures on the Black Father. Get the Father's Day messages, black and white. You know, I have to refer to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Yes, I'm his student by God's permission. Yes, I'm his follower by God's permission. But I'm not speaking necessarily as a student and follower of his, in as much as I have reached a level of realization that this is God's man. It is God's mouth. He is God's mouthpiece. What comes from that man's mouth actually is from the mind of God. And when he teaches not lectures as such, but he gives us principles that come from God, from the scriptures and prophets and messengers of God that will guide us as human beings. I don't care what color or race or ethnicity or class you are. Seek out his teaching, particularly on the woman. That's my advice. That's how I would respond to that question. Thank you, dear sister.
Yes, sir. All praises due to our wonderful elder, Brother James. And we have a question from Sister Anonymous. She says, wow, this is so heartbreaking. Oh, God.
And that's why
she
you're
says,
here.
She says, I think my marriage has hurt my child. My son always thought that once my husband and I got married, he could call him dad. As soon as he did, he told my son not to call him that, to just call him by his first name. When he told me, I could see the light leave his 8-year-old face. It has been 5 months, and I have yet to see him smile.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Woo.
Well, let me say this, and of course, Sister Aziza, you can definitely weigh in on this, too. This is very critical. Very critical. Every young boy wants a father in his life. Every young boy. So I can understand. Now, I must say, in Islam, in our tradition and in our teaching, we are taught that whenever there is a blended family, when the male of that family, the head of the house or the husband, acts as a father, which he should. He should give fatherly guidance, fatherly advice. But we're taught in Islam that if we're not the father of the child, we should not call ourselves the father of the child. Why? Because if the father is alive, no matter what condition the father is in, he's not beyond redemption. And the father is the source, if you will, the progenitor of that boy. That boy's features are probably from his father. He may have certain inclinations and ways of his father. We never want to take that credit from the father that brought that child into existence by the permission of Allah. So we are taught in Islam not to take the father's title as such. But everybody is not in Islam, and I do understand where you're coming from. Now, my question would be, did you talk to him and share with him the hurt that he inflicted on the child? Because I'm not trying to laugh, but dear sister, you have rights and you have power. And if it's hurting your son like that, you all need to have a family talk. Now, I don't know all the circumstances, but you should talk to him. So you don't have to be hurt and just stay in the hurt. You don't have to look at your children being afflicted with pain and then just let them stay in the pain. Speak up, stand up, sit down and discuss these things. That's your child. talk to them, your husband, and make him to know the pain that you have perceived he inflicted on your boy. Now, I don't know necessarily where he's coming from, that he doesn't want to be called father. I've already explained to you in Islam, we don't necessarily do that. We can say uncle, but never the father. But I don't know where he's coming from. Find out where he's coming from. Why? Because if he's not in Islam, there may be some other motive. You, sister, you gotta talk. Don't be afraid. I'm not telling you to be disrespectful to your husband, but don't be afraid to engage him in conversation, particularly where your children are concerned. Sit down and talk to him and let him know what's on your mind and what you perceive is on the mind of your son. And I would say do it right away. What is the motive for why he does not want to be referred to as father by your son? What is his motive? What is his reasoning? Of course, I don't know because you didn't give us a, you know, that kind of information. But you need to find out if you don't. It may be some misunderstanding. It may be something out of ignorance. But if it's ruining your family, ruining your son, then you need to talk with him. Sister Aziza, thank you, dear sister, for your question. Sister Aziza?
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm gonna let Brother Gene. He's on the line. Brother Gene, you have a question or a comment?
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Wa alaikum
salam. Yes, sir.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother James. I was just sitting back, sitting back, just listening, and I wasn't gonna tune in until I heard the one sister that called in and hearing the brother that called in. And I just want to say that there's only one man that is on the planet of this, on this earth, that is teaching on us on how to be men and women. And I encourage all of the listening audience and the ones that called in is just to get, go and seek the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It may be bitter in your mouth, but it can be sweet to your stomach. And we, when God made man, he made man to have power and dominion and to multiply and to replenish the earth and subdue it. But we as men has become, you know, subdued. We have got to become men and put before our children, as the young brother called in and said, what do you do about the lost children that, you know, seem like have no hope? We have to become better men. We have to put ourselves before them as an examples on men on how to be successful and not have to run a basketball. What do they look at every day? As role models. They're looking for role models, someone that they can look up to. You know, I'm not that old, but when I was young, we had role models, real strong black men. Today, all they have is the TV, LeBron James, how to be a rapper to become successful. So we as the FOI and the MGT, well, we got so much work to do. And with my temporary circumstances, I wish I could just get out there and just do it tomorrow. But Allah's the best knower. But when I'm able to, man, I'm going like a bat out of hell because we have got so much work to do. We've got to become men. We've got to put real men before these children. And to the woman that called in, what our women and young girls have to understand is that sex is divine. We've got to learn the divinity of sex. We're not making, and you mentioned Brother James earlier about making love and you know, sex, but what we attach to it is what makes it sin. But we've got to learn the divinity of it. And there's only one man that is the trumpet of truth. And I encourage you who are not non-registered Muslim, Christian, Buddhism, whatever your religion persuasion may be, get the teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It can save your life. And there's no other man on the face of this planet that is teaching you the value of yourself. Women, you are powerful. If you understand your connection with the Creator, man, you fall so in love with yourself to where you won't do anything to harm yourself. And I encourage that one sister that called in to sit down and encourage your daughter who is 16 and had two children. She's going to need you because she's a baby herself. We have got to stand up and become men and women and take and go out and save our people. Nobody else is going to do it. There's an unseen hand that is involved in all of this that we've got to pay attention to. We're being set up, and we can't let this enemy win. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Thank you, Bertie, for your comments. You know, Queen, before we go into the next question or comment, I want to say this regarding the condition of, you know, the circumstance, let me say, of all of those of you who have called in, and we appreciate your candor and your honesty regarding your personal testimony of what's happening in your life at this time. But we want you to know that every circumstance can be overcome as long as you are alive. Whatever mistakes we make and are making, you are not beyond repair. We are not. God has come for us in the person of Master Farag Muhammad. And he didn't come to condemn us. He came to save us. He knew what he would find when he came. It wasn't like he didn't know. He knew the condition of our people, the height of the condition, the width and breadth of the condition, the depth of the condition. There's nothing he didn't know that would surprise him when he arrived. Oh, my dear sisters, particularly my dear sisters, no matter what you may have engaged in and no matter what the consequences were thereof, you are loved. You are loved by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and by God himself. He's come for you. There ain't nothing that we could do that he would cause that would cause him to reject us, not in this condition. So what I just want to say, sister, you know, sister and brother, I don't know what city or state you're in, but whatever city or state you're in, find your nearest mosque, find your nearest study group, and go talk with the student minister there. And for the sisters, there's a wonderful class for you. It's called the MGT and GCC class. That's the Muslim Girls Training and General Civilization class. Become a part of that class. I guarantee you, no matter what your circumstance, is or circumstances are. That class will lift you, will raise you to the level of respect, self-respect, and the respect of others, and the love that you deserve. It's a need, so it's a human right. You'll find it there, sister. You'll find it there, brother. Not you in the MGP class, but you'll find it in the FOI class, the Fruit of Islam class. Go and investigate. I heartily, heartily encourage you to do so. So I wanted to say that, Sister Aziza. Thank you.
Yes, sir, Brother James. And I'm just, you know, I'm just not one that can hold my peace. It's just not in me to do it. And I'm chatting with my sister here, and I just need to say this. You know, I think that every woman desires to have a man who loves her, and, you know, I think it's always the prayer that if we have children from a previous relationship, a previous marriage, whatever the case may be, that our children are accepted and loved. Now, she's going to remain anonymous, but I was asking her particular questions about her situation. And, you know, the brother actually, and she said she didn't mind me sharing, so the brother actually told her in the beginning that he didn't want to be a father. He didn't want the responsibility of being a father as of yet. But what I found to be disturbing is that he's a father already to two daughters, and he did not want to be a father in their relationship. He didn't want to be a stepfather. Now, her son's father is deceased. He's been deceased. Excuse me. He was 6 months old. And she hasn't had a wide range of other relationships that involved her son, she says. Now, I don't want to be insensitive. That's the last thing I want to be, because I'm pretty sure that, you know, she felt that this man loved her, and certainly he must have some kind of care and concern for her, because, you know, he didn't keep her as a longtime girlfriend. He made her his wife. Mm-hmm. So certainly there was something deeper than just physical affection or whatever it may have been. But I just want to encourage my sisters that when you make the decision to marry and you have children, unfortunately, it's not a matter that you can be selfish in. If a man is good to you but not good to your babies, then he's not good to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I have to say that, because if you had this conversation with him and he told you how he felt, and she said that she never thought that he would tell the son that. So she took for granted that, oh, once he starts calling him dad, you know, he'll get used to it and he accepted. But he told her early on he didn't want to be a stepfather. Well, how in the hell you enter into a relationship with a woman with a child or children?
That's right.
And you don't want to even assume that role? Now, that's some BS. I just cannot tolerate in my own personal self anybody mistreating a child. He's 8 years old. He's not 18. Cool. He's not 16. He's mm-hmm. 8. You know, and so if you're going to live in the household or allow this child to grow up in your household, how in the hell you not take any responsibility, take on the role as a father, even if you are a step-parent? Even if you're a step-parent, you have some parental responsibility just because you're a grown man and he's a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't encourage anybody to get a divorce. I don't do that. That's never my call to make, because that's what she asked me. But that's not my call, sis. But as an advocate for children, as a mother, you know, your son does not have the responsibility in finding healthy relationships for himself. That is your responsibility.
That's
and
right, yeah.
Sometimes somebody gets or something gets so good to us that, you know, we'll take the chance and we'll remain in the relationship. But at the end of the day, your children are end up broken, and it's not worth it. He or she is not worth it to destroy mm-hmm. your child's life. Now, I'm not saying that all hope is lost. I'm not saying that. But if this man has any kind of humanity in him, he would understand how your son feels. And since she has yet to share that with him, I have encouraged her to do so.
That's right.
And inshallah, you know, they can move forward from there. It's a very new marriage, but they had a relationship for 4 years. So now this is why I'm so disturbed, because he's been in this child's life for 4 years already.
Hmm.
He's not, you know, this is not a new child. This is somebody that he's already, whether he's had a hand in raising him or not, he's been in his life for 4 years already.
That's right.
And I just don't get it. And even being told, sisters, please, if a man can accept your child, don't you know there's a part of you that he's not accepting?
Mm-hmm.
If he can't see the essence of you in the face of something that you gave life to, don't you realize that there's something about you that he's not accepting? And if he mistreats your child, all mistreatment is not physical. A lot of it is mental. A lot of it is emotional. And if you allow him or her to mistreat your child, then you have failed in your duty as a parent on the basic, the very basic needs, protection. Protection is not always physical. You don't leave your children in an environment where they're going to be harmed in any form or fashion. So that's why I say it and I say it again. When you are a parent, there are certain sacrifices that you have to make as a parent. So some of my sisters, you're going to have to put your big girl panties on and just suck it up and be mothers. And yes, I know you want to be a woman. And yes, I know you want that fulfilling relationship. But at what cost?
Mm-hmm.
At what cost? At the cost of our children being destroyed. And then they got to end up coming seeing somebody like me to defend them for capital murder, for rape, for assault. for theft, for whatever it is that they're acting out on. And at the end of the day, all you got out of the deal was a relationship that may or may not be fulfilling. But trust and believe me, if a man rejects your child, he's rejecting you, and you just don't see it yet. So, you know, I had to say that, Brother James.
Yes, ma'am. That's real talk. That's real talk, Queen. That's real, and it is disturbing. But that's real talk. That's just real talk. Maybe you can find a way to continue to talk with our sister.
Yes, sir, I will. I will. She listens to the show quite regularly, and, you know, I just thank Allah for the relationships that we are able to build and the confidence that we're able to build, that people are so willing to share, because they know that I will keep them anonymous as long as they desire to. But this is what it's all about. This is what we as people are supposed to be about. And it extends beyond the aisles of faith. I really, you know, I know that some of us may have a reputation of not associating with non-Muslims, but that is not the truth. And for those of you who may have heard that or have that impression, that is not the truth. We follow the perfect example of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who has made friends for us all over the world. And when you hear Minister Farrakhan, when he comes to your city, you have all kind of pastors and rabbis and bishops nuns and priests and all kinds of people who are in his company, because these are people who accept the truth of God irregardless to who speaks it. So that is the position that all of us here and Nation Building take. It has always been the goal to inspire and to help. You know, I'm not trying to win no popularity contest. I don't care if you don't know my name. Just call me Queen and we good. But if I can help you, then, you know, that is the goal. And that's the goal of all of us. And so, Brother James, I want to say this before we go, because tomorrow we are going to have, we having two broadcasts actually tomorrow. We're going to be broadcasting Brother Student Minister Demetric Muhammad live from Jackson, Mississippi. And then we're still going to carry on with our youth program. I want to make my word bond. I kind of fell off this week from being ill, but I want to stay on top of that about our missing children. And yes, I want to encourage all of you to participate, because I don't know who we're waiting on. You know, I know we're not waiting on law enforcement or depending on this government to go after our children. We cannot concern ourselves, and I'm not saying be unconcerned, but we cannot concern ourselves with what's going on in Africa when we are dying right here. Our babies are dying right here. We as black Americans are not going to benefit anybody if we are burying our future or losing our future by the loss of our children. We have over 300,000 black children missing, that have been missing, and nobody is looking for them. And we have a responsibility that we cannot sit up and let time go by year after year, day after day. Our children are coming up missing. They're not just missing. They're still coming up missing.
Mm-hmm.
And like Minister Tony said, sex trafficking is a business. Well, if they know that it's a business, then you better know that they got their hand in it. And if they got their hand in it, you got to know that law enforcement is involved in it. So how in the hell you going to ask the same person who perpetrated the crime against you to help you solve the crime? It's not going to happen.
Come on, Queen. That's right.
So we have to do this. Because it might have been somebody's child yesterday. It could be your child tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It could be your grandchild. It could be anybody's child. It shouldn't matter. And
That's right.
We really want to solve the problems of black people in the black community, if we really want to solve them, then we stop being so damn afraid of doing what is natural and come together and unify for all purposes, whether it's business, no matter what it is. Donald B. Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our unity is more powerful than an atomic bomb. So then why are we sitting on the opportunity to unify? Every day that you suck breath, you have an opportunity to unify with your people for the good of all your people. But it shouldn't be Muslims against the Christians and the Christians against the Catholic Church. And, hey, when they get ready to kill us, hang us, and snatch our children, they're not asking us what our religious preference is. They don't care. They just see that we black. And that's why it shouldn't make a difference what our religious beliefs are. But let's stand on truth. And if you've got anything that you feel that the Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan has lied about, you let me know so I can clear it up for you. Because that brother, that man represents truth. And everything that he's ever said has been the truth. And now look at what's happening to our people. And look what's happening to our children. That's the quickest way to eradicate a race is to kill the seed. And they're killing our children each and every day. So I want to encourage all of you, because I don't want to get emotional. I want to encourage all of you to please join us tomorrow night. I know that the shows are going to be very extensive because we got 3 hours with Brother Dimitri and 2 hours on Black Mr. Youth. But join us tomorrow. It would behoove you to participate in both of those as Brother Dimitri is going to be clearing up, I think it's rumors and myths about the Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan, and then we're going to be followed by a Black and Missing You. So that's all I wanted to say, Brother James, and thank you for yielding the time to me to share.
By all means, Queen, and that's really what part of this show, well, I'm glad you brought that in because it appeared with the question we weren't going to be able to get it in, but I'm so glad because that's the basis of our show. On until we set up something concrete that we can actually put what we're talking about where the missing children are concerned into actual practice. So thank you for bringing that in, and I'm hoping that as many as can will tune in tomorrow.
Yes, sir. All praises
to
Allah.
Thank you. All praises due to Allah.
And we want to set up chapters in each city. You know, our children are missing from all over. You know, we are at the beginning stages of this. But our goal is to set up chapters, you know, missing and recovery chapters in each city where our children are missing, which is all over the country. And together we can do this. We have men who can train. Can get you information. We have information on how you can establish those relationships with law enforcement so that you can move throughout your community safely. This is not a time to be fickle. You know, they don't ask you anything about your criminal background. They don't ask you for your fingerprints or nothing like that.
Come
if
on,
you volunteer to be a searcher for a missing child. So only problems that you may have is if you're a registered sex offender. If you're a registered sex offender, you might not want to get involved for obvious reasons. But
that's
I'm
right.
telling you that everybody has a responsibility. Our sisters, I know sisters, all sisters are not like me. You're not going to get up out your bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and go get no child. But our sisters can become a part of what we call our geek squad. And our geek squad
mm-hmm.
are our researchers that you can pull
mm-hmm.
data from the computer from the safety of your own home. So everybody can participate. If those beautiful babies from Respect for Life Academy in Richmond,
That's
Virginia
right. That's right.
can get history on children that have been missing for years, and they share that information with us, then certainly, even if you don't have the capability to get out and move about in the community, if you have a computer, if you have an iPhone, please utilize your tools to help find our missing children. Everybody can do something. If it's nothing but stand on your porch during the time when children are in commute to school and be vigilant to just stand there and watch out for our children, that's better than doing nothing. Everybody can do something. If you selling dope on the corner, well, if you're out there during school time, just stand down for a little bit and just watch the community so that you can make sure that the children get home safely. And then at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock, whenever they get out of school, just stand down for a minute and be vigilant in the community just to make sure that the babies don't get snatched and that they're okay on their journeys home to and from.
Yes, ma'am.
So everybody has a responsibility. To my gangbangers out there, if anything is going on underground in the black community, y'all know about it. I'm just asking y'all to draw a morality line that, hey, you know, we ain't asking you to be no snitch, but draw the line when it comes to snatching these babies and snatching these
That's
young
right.
women and say, hey, this can't go on in our neighborhood. Because it might not be your sister today, it might not be your cousin today, but it may be tomorrow, and you know how you would feel. So I'm calling on everybody, the winos, if you and the prostitutes, since you're out there anyway. Just stand down a minute when you see
That's
our children
right.
in the community, and just stand vigilant and watch over them. Everybody can participate in this. So there's no excuse. No excuse whatsoever. So anybody who is interested in being on the task force, email us at YGBLive. That's Y as in yo-yo, G as in girl, B as in boy, for young, gifted, and black. It's YGBLive at Gmail, or hit me on my inbox at Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad on Facebook, and on my other inbox at Aziza Queen Muhammad on Facebook, or tweet me at Z65, and Z is spelled Z-E-I, 65 on Twitter, because we want to have everybody involved in this. So I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to shut up now, Brother Q.
That's all right. That's the kind of announcement we need, definitely. So I'm looking forward to being on, and again, I encourage everyone else to be on and get involved. This is a crisis
yes.
situation. And it's epidemic.
Yes,
so,
yes sir.
I mean, I can't say it any better than you did with any greater passion there, sister. Let's just get involved.
Yes, sir. All praise is due to Allah. Okay, well, that's our show for tonight, Brother James. Thank you for a beautiful message, and thank you for beautiful information that you shared with the cops. Mm-hmm. I don't know why everybody was on the phone. They still on the phone, and they still nothing, but all praise is due to Allah. So I hope that you all will take notes. I hope that you were able to learn something, and I hope it's something that you can move forward with in
that's
your own
right.
family.
That's what really counts. We love to hear from you, and we're so thankful to Allah that you stayed with us. So keep coming on, even if you're going to be on in silence, keep coming on. But I just want to encourage you, we love to hear from you.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, we leave you as we came before you in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Good night, Queen. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.